Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Here we go. Hour number two. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. It's great to have you in on this Thursday. Man, back when I was in college, I remember this was day two of the weekend. We used to get the weekend started Wednesday night. Was that absurd? Would anyone else do it like that?
Wednesday night, huh?
Wednesday night is when the weekend started.
I know when we were in college, we started Thursday night.
Same with me, Thursday night.
Week. Why?
San Francisco State. I don't know.
No, I'm saying that when I was in college, we were the ones who actually made Thursday night a thing.
They had college back then.
Yeah, it was actually called university, Joe. You had to live there.
The Institute.
I paid $48 tuition. It was brutal. We had to sell two cows, Lo.
It is great to have you all in here on Joe Lo and Dibs today on 95.7 The Game. We got a little football conversation we're going to get into. We got hoops at the bottom of the hour. 7:30, 29 minutes from now, Bobby Marks, former Nets GM, now front office insider for the Vertical, set to join us to have a little discussion. Then at 7:45, we're going to have some fun. What's the worst pro sports city in the country? The worst. Because a lot of people feel that was in action last night. Good God, Capitals and Wizards. Get it together. Doesn't matter who your president is. They can't win. Ovechkin can't get past the second round. Have you seen this? 2 years in a row, they've won the President's Cup. 2 years. That's best record during the regular season. And what's it resulted in? Second round exit. Unbelievable. Here's Dibs with your update.
Well, that's brutal stuff for Washington.
That's a bad lead-in for you. Sorry
about
that.
No, it's fine. The Warriors are going to find out their Western Conference Finals foe maybe tonight, depending on what happens between the Rockets and the Spurs. San Antonio leads it 3-2. Game 6 is in Houston. Kawhi Leonard questionable with that ankle injury. Game 1 of the Conference Finals will either be Sunday at 12:30 or Tuesday night at 7:30. Both games would be at Oracle. All the action here on 95.7 The Game. Story number two, the A's wrapped up the Angels quite nicely.
And the pitch is a high fly ball, right center playable. Rajay Davis is there in right center. He makes the catch, and this ball game is over, and the A's have won the series over the Angels. On a high fly ball to right center field, corralled by Rajay Davis, and the A's have beaten the Halos on this Wednesday by the final of 3-1.
Ken Korak heard here on 95.7 The Game. Andrew Triggs, his fifth win. Chad Pinder with a home run. The A's are in Texas tomorrow. The Giants, meanwhile, come home off a tough road trip that was made better by Buster Posey's hot bat.
High drive. Left field. Out of here. He's done it again, and this game is tied.
Dwayne Kuiper, NBC Sports Bay Area. The Giants win at 6-5. Christian Arroyo, bases clearing double in the ninth. The difference, they come home for a 7-game homestand. Tie block against the Reds and Bronson Arroyo tonight. The update brought to you by East Bay Mini in Pleasanton. Expand your comfort zone in the spacious Mini Countryman today at East Bay Mini in Pleasanton. Visit eastbaymini.com, eastbaymini.com. I'm Dan Dibley on your home of the Warriors, 95.7 The Game.
Thank you, Dibs. From the 925, Joe, why is your friend called the Puma? Did he have a Puma in Vegas like Tyson had a lion? Great question. It's actually a self-proclaimed nickname, which, if you know him, makes it all the more outrageous. From the 925 as well. At Cal, you had too many 8 a.m. classes on Thursday to start Wednesday night. I wish I had an easy school like Joe. Hashtag Zinger. Yeah, I mean, Cal's a great school. I wouldn't expect Cal students to be out there Wednesday night getting their weekend in. It's a rare breed. A rare breed that can go Wednesday to Sunday and then get ready for Monday Night Football.
That's nice.
And then Taco Tuesday, and then it's the weekend. That's how you do it.
Wow.
Full wraparound schedule.
That's how you do it. That's how you don't go to Harvard. That's how you don't get in the Ivy League. But that's how you do it if you're Joe Fortenbaugh and you get into sports talk radio. All right. Help me out here. Blaine Gabbert has played in the NFL for 6 years. After 6 years, he has a completion percentage of 56%. For those who don't know how that relates to the rest of the league, it's garbage. 56% is garbage. 56% is something virtually any quarterback who makes it in the NFL can put up. It's a baseline. He's thrown 38 touchdown passes and 37 interceptions. You got guys like Peyton Manning who throw 50 touchdowns in a year. Blaine Gabbert's needed 6 years to get to 38. Meanwhile, he's thrown 37 interceptions in that time. But don't worry, Blaine Gabbert has himself a team. According to multiple reports, signed a one-year deal with Bruce Arians and the Cardinals yesterday. How? How would the Cardinals go with Blaine Gabbert over Colin Kaepernick? How is the whole league going with guys like Gabbert? Guys like, just so many of them, over a guy like Colin Kaepernick?
I think that they feel that the risk is not worth the reward that they think that they can get. And Blaine Gabbert, you know, is a good guy. He's a nice piece, you know, a journeyman, backup guy. And I think Colin's better than him. I think that a lot of things going on with Colin now is hopefully his agents are advising him right. And I don't know what's going on. I don't know as far as this guy trying to overprice himself. Does he want starting at $5 million? I think now when you look at Colin Kaepernick, his market value is $2 to $3 million. Don't know if that's the issue. And that's what the baffling thing is to me. Is this guy out there looking for $8-9 million? If he is, he's not going to get signed. I think now the chairs have drying up. The musical chairs is drying up. The songs have been almost sung. And I think Colin needs to look at and reevaluate and say, okay, do I want to play for darn near the minimum and go to a team where I'm going to have a chance to compete, or go to a team where I don't think the quarterback is going to be starting the whole year and try to go link, try to catch on? That's where he's at, because right now, Joe, no one is viewing this guy as their starter and definitely not as the face of the franchise.
I think there's four converging factors at play here, And I'm not sure if anyone weighs more than the other. I'm not sure if they all mean something to the same people. I'm not sure if it's just one that's in play when it comes to certain teams. Money is certainly something you have to bring up. Gabbert's going to get a token deal here, Colin may think he's worth $6-7 million, and that could scare people off. Two, the activism, the distraction. Is he a guy that you want in the clubhouse knowing you could have a lot of individuals asking questions? All the players have to answer questions. Who knows? Some say it's not going to be a problem. Teams could view it that way. Number three, does he want to be a starter? Is he unwilling to understand the role? And number four, does he even want to play football? Does he even want to play? Because you had that initial report that came out. Peter King floated it Monday Morning Quarterback that maybe the social justice is where his heart's at. Maybe that's what he wants to continue doing. He's good at it. So why not continue in that direction? Maybe football has run its course. Do you think it's any one of those four specifically, Dibs? But what do you think's going on that's keeping Colin Kaepernick out of the NFL, but one of the worst quarterbacks to play the game has another job?
I think that the wants to start is overplayed. I don't know if there's any evidence to the fact that he wants to start, so I'll take that one out of it. But the other three, money, I think he's asking for more than certainly he's going to get as this market continues to dry up. And you look around, it's just he and RG3, if I'm not mistaken, quarterbacks with some experience who are yet to return. Does he want to play? That to me is the biggest, I think, wrench in all of this, the biggest question mark. Because if he really wanted to play, if he had this burning desire to play, there'd be some leaked video of him at a high school or junior college working out and throwing, or video of him in the weight room getting after it. There'd be some sort of a sense of a campaign that, look, they're keeping me out. I'm out here with a sled full of weights, Lo, I'm doing my workouts. Even though you don't want to put yourself out there like that, there would be some word of that if he really wanted to play. So for me, that's the biggest unanswered question in all this. Does he really want to play?
We got a poll question up on Twitter right now, 957TheGame. The Twitter handle at 957TheGame. Is Colin Kaepernick being blackballed by the NFL? Lo, do you think that's the case here?
I don't know if it's the case, Joe. I think I really believe this is the financial deal. Because, and like Dibs, like you're saying, I don't know if guys put up videos. I don't know how much that really helps their case or their cause. I think that you got to realize if Colin goes and do anything, if he speaks at a church or if he goes and speaks at an advocate and, you know, do something, a certain donate money or do any foundation or helping anyone, it's going to be to the forefront. And that is the thing that's the thing that seems that's driving the media, because that's what they want to see. So I don't know. I think this guy's probably working out. I think he's probably lifting. I think he's probably wanting to play. Because the day after you called it, he said, hey, you said watch. It wouldn't surprise me if Colin says, hey, I'm going to stand. Because why do you think he said that? You said because he wanted to play. Now all of a sudden, people are saying he doesn't want to play. First thing he did, he told his agent, whatever, hey, you make sure that all these teams know that I'm still going to be a part of this, but I'm going to stand. I'm no longer doing this. I'm still stay involved. So when he did that, that took away a lot of the heat. That took away a lot of the pressure. So I think that he does want to play. I just think right now, situation where this guy's outpricing himself and he wants too much and the market's not going to give it to him.
So then what happens next? You just don't play ever again?
No, I think that he either wakes up and says, you know what? I'm going to come to someone's camp and I'm going to sign for the minimum, but I'm going to make sure that I go to the right place. And I think that he'll have some options. He can look at a team like Cleveland and say, okay, is this quarterback going to stay as the starter the whole year? Probably not. You look at a place like, you know, say, okay, a place like, you know, Jacksonville. You look at a place, you know, that has some issues. You say, okay, Arizona, though, they just got another guy, so probably not there. But you go through and you got to get your agent, get some, and go look at San Francisco. Not San Francisco, but Pittsburgh Steelers. Say, you know, Big Ben, there's possible that this guy might get hurt again because of the way that he plays. So you look at it. You go through your evaluation. You start finding those teams that have guys that are starting that are backups. And then you go with the teams that are starting with older quarterbacks, the guys that are injury prone.
Wouldn't it make sense that if he honestly wanted to play, because I don't think he does. I don't think he cares that much. Because if you wanted to, why wouldn't you be on the media circuit right now? Like, you don't hear much from him outside of the social justice, which is great. But when it comes to playing football, you're not hearing anything from him. You got people that are anonymous talking to Peter King saying, I don't think he wants to play. Like, he comes out in defense. Oh, no, that's wrong. I want to play. Why not go on ESPN? Why not go on Fox? Why not do the whole media tour and just get it out there? I definitely want to play. No, I don't think I'm being blackballed. There's a lot of good talent in this league. I haven't been as great as I could be the last few years, but I'm working to get better. Why wouldn't you be doing that? That, to me, would be the number one step to get the message out there. Then, if no one's interested in kicking the tires, the narrative of you being blackballed becomes that much stronger because you're making it clear to everyone you want to play.
That's a fair assessment, but I look at it and he's saying, okay, why do I have to do that when Sanchez, Gabbert, all these guys, Jay Cutler, none of those guys came out and said that they wanted to play. It's just when you're a free agent, you don't have to say that. You just usually, but he, I guess, is in a different situation because we made the point you make. So I just think that you don't do that at times, but now desperate measures at desperate times take desperate measures. And maybe he needs, if he really wants to play, now he might need to come out and do some of that.
If he really wanted to play, and I'm with you, Joe, I'm questioning whether or not he does or not. I think a perfect landing spot would be to go the Flutie route and go to Canada. Go to Canada, play a season. You don't have to worry about kneeling for the anthem because it's not the United States anthem that you hate. It's O Canada. He'd be hand on heart. The Canadians would love him because of the anti-American sentiment up there, how they think that this country is being run incorrectly, shall we say. He would have a free run at being able to do both. Show you're into football again. You could still do your activism in a place that I believe would love him.
How's that viewed amongst guys in the league? You played for a lot of years. You were never in a situation like that. You were always in high demand, but you were probably around a lot of guys who that's where they had to consider going for their second chance.
Yeah, guys don't frown at Canada. I think it's a great opportunity. If you want to go earn money and go play ball and continue to hone your skills or chase your dream, you do that. I just don't know if Colin Kaepernick, if you're talking about if that's the only way to show that he loves football, there's a lot of guys that would punt and pass and say, I'm done.
So do you think he retires?
If his phone doesn't ring and if he doesn't get picked up for the minimum, I think he retires then because he's not going to go to Canada.
888-957-9570 if you want to weigh in. Blaine Gabbert is a bum, an absolute bum. The guy has never done anything in his career. He's been around 6 years. So if you've got any case to make that there's still something to be done, there's still some development, it's over. 6 years is a lifetime in the National Football League. What has he done besides lose? That's something Blaine Gabbert does exceptionally well. He loses football games. He doesn't make plays. He doesn't complete passes. Yet Arizona, and this is why teams like Arizona can't get over the hump, they make these decisions. You see what happens to a team like the Raiders when their quarterback goes down. The season immediately ends. That's going to happen virtually anywhere. But at least with a competent backup, you can give yourself a fighting chance to maybe just maybe eke out a single playoff win. Arizona surprises me that they make a move like this, because just a few years ago, they had that playoff game against Carolina, which was probably the worst playoff game in the history of the NFL. Do you remember that game? It was nothing but punts. The two sides, all the quarterbacks were hurt.
Right.
No one could play in that game. It was so bad. They were down to
Lindley, right? Ryan Lindley.
Lindley was quarterbacking. And now here they are again. An old man in Carson Palmer. They missed on all the potential developmental projects because they weren't willing to trade up. Fine. But now here comes Blaine Gabbert. When Carson Palmer gets hurt, and it's a when, not an if, because he's getting hurt, this is who they're going to turn to. And then they're going to lose, and then they're going to look around and go, man, that's why the value of quarterback play in the NFL, man, that's why you pay him so much money. Well, go out and pay a competent backup. This guy's a bum. I mean, I cannot believe he continues to get jobs in the National Football League. What did Arizona see in this guy that made them thought, Blaine Gabbert? Let's make him the number two because Carson Palmer's so durable we won't have to worry about it. Yeah, okay. Anyone?
He's a good game manager, Joe.
He's not. He's terrible. There's literally nothing you can throw at me. He's terrible.
And Joe, I've been on so many teams. We've had Steve Walsh as a backup. I mean, played at Miami. This guy couldn't hit a back of a barn. Scott Mitchell was a backup at certain times. And a lot of these guys are just, like you said, horrible. But what they do is they bring stability. Sometimes they help other quarterbacks. They help the development. They're good teamed players. And they help bring a leadership into the locker room. A lot of these guys, you know, Sanchez. Let's take him for instance. Sanchez, you see how you heard what the young quarterback was saying in Dallas, talking about, hey, this guy helps me. Here's a guy. So he might.
Yeah, he's lying. He's just telling the media he helped him. You can't say the truth. How does Mark Sanchez help Dak Prescott? Mark Sanchez has never done anything. When you talk about Gabbert, and I see what you're saying, it makes sense. If you bring in a veteran backup like Matt Hasselbeck at the end of his career, I can get that. But what's Gabbert going to teach a young quarterback? More importantly, why would you want a young quarterback learning from Blaine Gabbert? I would want that quarterback. I'd say, you know what? Watch Blaine and do the opposite of everything he does. Seriously, though, no, he's never had any success, so why would you want a young guy learning from him?
I've seen quarterbacks come in, John Kitna, and not a starter.
Kitna made plays.
And could go out and help guys. I've seen a guy like Steve Walsh, like I was talking about. I don't know what play he made in the National Football League, but he was a smart guy, and he could go out and help guys and be that mentor for certain guys. Play with a guy, Bowman, who was there with Joey Flacco. This guy was 37 years old when they brought him in. Bowman, Todd Bowman, and he was a backup journeyman guy who probably never even started in a game. He played in the league for 16, 17 years as a backup just because he was a smart guy. His last place was Todd Bowman, played with me in Baltimore. And then, you know, you look at certain guys like the Dilfers, and he's a smart guy. But there's a lot of quarterbacks. Billy Volek, you know, he could help. He helped certain quarterbacks.
Yeah, you're mentioning guys who made plays. Billy Volek won a playoff game. Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. I know
Sanchez,
it was the defense, but he made plays.
But you got to say.
Sanchez is known for a butt fumble. That's not a play.
He is, Joe. But
it's a comic routine.
And trust me, I don't think Sanchez is a good quarterback. But you've seen him win some games when he was there with the Jets when they had that good defense. He went out and managed games. Made some decent throws at times.
I know. He's not good, but he's made enough plays to justify a backup spot. Gabbert has not. That's why when I ask, what has he done that would get him a backup spot? All your points are valid. Volek and all the other guys you mentioned, yeah, I can see that. I can see why Sanchez is still in the league as a backup. He did just enough to hang on. Now, he's terrible when he gets in there.
They're terrible when he gets on the field. Absolutely.
He's terrible.
Bombs.
But Gabbert has never done anything. Anything. Sanchez could ride the wave of what the Jet defense did for him by getting him to those two AFC championship games. I'm okay with that because you played in big games, so you at least had that experience. Gabbert has done nothing. Nothing. Like last year, they went into the season giving him the job. Nobody in that organization wanted Colin to play. And it was so bad, they had to make the switch. Like, the guy has never made a play. And I know I'm being harsh on him, but I don't understand how Cap, if he wants a job, can't get it, while this guy can.
I do, Joe, trust me, I understand what you're saying, but maybe this will help you a little more. Take Bruce Arians. You think he's a good coach? You look at Belichick. You think he's a great coach? Think those guys know where the ball should go? You put them behind center, and they're not going to make plays. But if you put them in a quarterback room, they'll show you where the ball should go. And I'm not comparing these guys, their mental IQ, to these great coaches. But some of these guys, Joe, they're pretty smart. Gabbert, when he gets done, he'll probably coach. And he'll probably –
No, he won't. He can't. You can't do that. He's never done anything. Your example that you should be using right now is Gary Kubiak. Kubiak was a guy who played quarterback in the NFL, but what did he do? He backed up Elway, and he didn't have the skill to win. He didn't have the skill to make a lot of plays, but he was always considered a brilliant mind. Always. Knew the position, just physically couldn't execute it. And that's what led to coaching. And that's also partially led to a Super Bowl. I don't know that story as well, but yeah, you could be right there because you know him. So if you're saying it, I'll definitely support you on that. But that's the Kubiak story. Gabbert's not that guy. Gabbert's not smart. He can't make reads. Like, I've never seen him make reads. He was in situations last year with the Niners where no one was asking him to win games. No one was asking him to throw for 350. No one was asking him to throw it down the field. They were saying, just check it down. Just find Vance McDonald over the middle for 3 yards. And he couldn't do it. Like, that was too much for him. Throwing the swing pass was too much for him. The very basic essence of quarterback play was overwhelming for the guy. So to sign him when Carson Palmer inevitably goes down, see ya, Arizona. That's probably why you got an over-under of 7.5 surprising people down there in Las Vegas. Because you know Palmer's going to get hurt because he's old and he gets hurt every year. And then this guy's going to come in. And what's he going to do? He's going to throw interceptions and incomplete passes. That's what he's going to do. Isaac, on the 101, thank you for calling the program. Your thoughts on Colin Kaepernick?
Hey, good morning, boys. I think you guys are delving a little too far into it. Maybe he just sucks and we're starting to see what the league really thinks about him.
But Blaine Gabbert sucks, and he keeps getting jobs. Mark Sanchez sucks. Matt Castle sucks.
I mean, that's two big things that are strikes against him right away. And then, like Div was saying, the guy doesn't want to play football. I mean, he's right. He should be at a junior college somewhere pushing a damn sled and making some passes. I don't see it. I think the league is telling us what we as true Niner fans have known for quite some time. Thanks, boys.
Appreciate the phone call. Big Bird, Castro Valley, go ahead. Thoughts on Kaepernick.
Here you got a guy who, the team was winning. He was kind of thought of as a little bit of a punk. He wore his beach to, you know, the press conferences, but it was everybody overlooked it because, you know, they were winning. Then the team fell apart, and he got this reputation. You know, he wasn't playing well. He got this reputation that he wasn't studying. You know, they said he wasn't bringing his tablet around, and then he gets benched. Next year, he comes back. They got Gabbert. They don't know who's starting. And instead of focusing on football, you know, the team, you know, he was on the hook for, what, $12 million or something that year? The team had to pay him. And instead of, you know, trying to win the job and focusing on football and studying, he was a distraction. He, like, started this whole kneeling thing or sitting down thing he started with. And, you know, if I'm a team and I'm like, okay, I'm paying this guy $12 million, and he doesn't even look like he wants to play. He looks like he wants to, you know, be a public phenomenon, but he doesn't look like he cares about football at all. If you take the whole thing and you read it back, your GM or somebody out there looking for a quarterback, you don't want to touch him.
Appreciate the phone call. Thank you, Big Bird and Castro Valley. One more. Let's keep it dialed in quick. Mike, San Francisco, get to the point. Go.
Hey, guys. Hey, I was asking about Kaepernick. Didn't he have a player option for this year?
He did, yes.
So he walked away from the money, and maybe I think a starting job working under Shanahan, he could have got better, or I don't understand. It's his fault.
Fair assessment. Great point. Thank you. I would say that there was probably a decision between the team and the player that if you opt in,
they're going to cut you,
and you're not going to get any of this anyway. You can go ahead and walk on your own terms and make it look a little bit better.
That's exactly what happened. What did you think about him against Miami, Colin Kaepernick, trying to get in the end zone at the end of the game?
I like the play at the end of the game. He tried to win the game. He tried to make a winning play at the end.
He tried to win the game. How about when he played against the Rams? You saw the hustle. So when people say that he didn't want to and he's not trying, didn't see that.
What'd you think about that performance against Chicago when he threw for 4 yards?
Whew.
That was a tough one.
Chicago's on the schedule again this year.
Man.
They got to go ahead and just give the second buyout for that one. I think we're all done with the San Francisco-Chicago rivalry. This is not the 80s. This is not the 80s. Let's not try to bring this thing back. Give it a few years for crying out loud.
Now, back to Joe, Low, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
By and large, for this program, you keep an eye out on the news? You use the social media sites. You go to certain sports sites. What's big? What's trending? What people are talking about? And then you figure out how you want to slot it into the show, what you want to talk about, how you can make it unique, original, fresh, engaging. This morning, I come in, and you've got a decent amount of topics ready to go. And then I end up on the front page at ESPN just to go through kind of those final checks. And it's like the opening two stories, Draymond Green comments, Kevin Durant comments. You guys are off. How's everyone making comments? Did they even have practice yesterday?
They must have. They had a media availability.
Just comments. They're off today, but just comments everywhere. We'll start with Draymond Green, who stopped traffic, feels the media may have misconstrued what he said about the Cleveland Cavaliers just a few days ago. Here's Draymond.
I didn't say I was disappointed with their competition. First off, people always want to take a statement and take a piece of a statement and then say, oh, man, Draymond said the Cavs aren't playing anybody. They never say Draymond said Cleveland's playing great basketball. You know, so everybody's always chasing the headline, the controversy. Watching ESPN is not watching a controversial reality TV show. It's, you know, it's pretty pathetic that's what the headline everybody wants. You know, Draymond's disappointed with who Cleveland plays. Do I care who Cleveland plays or how the other team play? But I am a basketball fan, and I know what I want to watch as a basketball fan. So, you know, I don't understand how all these things are always made so controversial. It's just ridiculous how everybody's always searching for a controversy. So there go y'all headline of the day. Draymond said Cleveland's playing great basketball. Let's see if that one makes
Always outspoken, always good for a soundbite. But he makes a very good point. I want you to listen to the opening few seconds of this again. Cue it up.
I didn't say I was disappointed with their competition. First off, people always want to take a statement and take a piece of a statement and then say, oh man, Draymond said the Cavs aren't playing anybody. They never say Draymond said Cleveland's playing great basketball.
Cut it right there. He's aware. He's aware of how the game works. You could have a comment that goes on and on for 2 to 3 minutes, but in order to get the clicks, in order to get the attention, which leads to the ad dollars, you find the juiciest piece in there. You might get a little creative with the way in which you phrase it, and you throw it up in a headline. He knows that. So if he knows that, why does he say things like that? Can someone help me out? Like, if you don't want to have the backlash of this, you give the standard boilerplate cliche answers. He just can't help himself, Lo.
He can't. And Dre, I wouldn't back down. I like how I love it. I love it. I love that he just say, here's how it is. Draymond said, we got the piece from the other day when him and KD was up on the stage. His exact words, to my understanding, was this. He said, Cleveland's playing great. They're playing great basketball. He said, but the other teams that they're playing against, the other teams aren't pretty much was saying that are suck. That's what he said. So is that a so you can interpret that. Is that a slight on Cleveland? Because he said Cleveland's playing great, but the competition they're playing isn't that good. So you can take that because you left it open-ended. You put yourself in that situation. He said Cleveland's playing great, but the teams that they're playing over their needs pretty much you're saying suck.
Dibs, the responsibility of the media. Draymond has a pretty fair point here. This is the way things are done now in order to draw attention. You take the sexy part of the quote, even if it takes it out of context. How responsible are they for this situation? Is this new age media? We have to accept it, or should changes be made?
It's something that we have to accept, and this is something that I've talked with our good friend Matt Steinmetz about ad nauseum, the difference between media and journalism. And the fact that I consider myself a member of the media, I don't really consider myself a journalist. I'm not out there breaking stories. I'm not working sources. I'm a guy with opinion on the radio. I'm a member of the media. So when you're Draymond Green and you're talking into a microphone, there are some journalists there, people who will respect the rules of journalism and not take quotes out of context and not use things like clickbait or fake news or, you know, trolling headlines just to get people's attention. But unfortunately, many people out there are in the media and they're willing to do that because it's more page views, it's more money for the reporter, and on and on and on. You know more about that business than I do. And you know that some articles you could put up at covers.com, while not as factually accurate as others, will draw more attention.
Yeah. It's all about the headline. That's why Tim Tebow is the draw that he is. This is why people won't let Tebow go away, because they know if the word Tebow, the name Tebow, is in a headline, the clicks will be through the roof. It's why ESPN celebrated his birthday once during a segment where he wasn't even there. They had a cake for him. Herm Edwards went nuts. Sarah Walsh was wearing a party hat. They were going nuts for his birthday just because it was an opportunity to talk about him.
Yeah.
This is what you see now with LeVar Ball. If you throw LeVar Ball in a headline, people click.
Right.
And they use that information as a guide. Okay, this is obviously a hot topic. It could be LeVar Ball takes a walk. People will click on it. They'll click on it more than they click on something else. And that is the determining factor. We need to get this guy on TV more. And Draymond Green has become one of those individuals. Anytime he says something, it becomes a headline because he gives you good stuff. And people will take some liberties with his comments.
Yeah, and now I want both you guys to kind of listen to what happened. And you guys, we can go through this and say, is this bait or is the media misrepresenting Draymond? Take a listen to Draymond another day.
I think Cleveland's been playing great basketball. You know, you watch them, it's been amazing. And then you watch other teams that they're playing against, not so much. So that's just my opinion, though. But whatever. Who cares?
Now, is that the entire quote? Or is that a quote set up to make him look better?
That was after when him and KD was up on the stage. And they were both talking about different things, and because they just went through the sweep. And then they asked him about Cleveland, and he said that was his quote. But so when you say that, it's sort of like, okay, so what are you saying? Okay, Cleveland's playing great, but those other teams, so he's talking about those teams in the East. So when you make that statement, are you really picking Cleveland up? Are you just saying Cleveland's great? Really, are they really that great? But you're saying not those other teams, not so great. So what are you saying about that conference?
You know what I think he's saying? I'm just guessing. I think what he's doing is he's watching these games and he's thinking, pick it up, Toronto, give them a challenge, beat them one game, extend the series. Just like we're sitting here tonight saying, you know what? If Houston wins this game, that's great because the Warriors get more rest and it's more wear on the tires for the Spurs or Rockets, whoever comes out of it. I think that's what it is. I think it's gambler's mentality. He's not gambling.
Sure.
But it's gambler's mentality. You're sitting there rooting for specific things to happen because of a personal interest. Like, I'll be rooting for a team to get into a position to kick a field goal when they shouldn't necessarily want a field goal because of an over-under, right? Some little thing that no one else would care about, no coach would angle for, because I need a certain specific thing to happen to cash a bet. He's sitting there, and he's probably watching this game thinking, man, Toronto's a freaking joke. They can't even contend with these guys. Win one game and make LeBron play another 40 minutes. Win one game, Indiana. Win one game, Toronto. And then he goes out and he gives a quote like that that's based on those emotions, and people run wild with it. I don't see anything wrong with it, obviously.
But why? And LeBron wouldn't say that when he could say, God, they played Portland. They played these two teams, Utah. Got motorboated. Portland got motorboated.
He's too busy pursuing greatness. Why would he make that comment?
But and then Dibs, you got to look how close their game was. Cleveland almost lost to Indy. You look at the first game. Cal Irvin, they played the Dubs pretty good. It was a high scoring game. Had a chance, and then the Dubs pulled away. So Dibs, when you talk about these two teams, what, the West had one more win than those two teams. So when you look at it like that, is it really that much parody?
I think Draymond is just looking for more entertainment, and I don't think there is parody at the top. There certainly is parody between teams 3 through 12. If you took the Cavs and the Warriors out of it and held the NBA playoffs with the remaining teams, it would be a pretty damn entertaining playoffs.
True.
It's a pretty good point.
Now back to Joe, Low, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Let me tell you something. Here is how it's going to play out for the next hour. We want your calls, and you've already lit it up. 888-957-9570. The worst sports city in the country. 888-957-9570. Good friend of the program, D-Train, Dontrell Willis at 8:05. And then an hour from now, we've got tickets to give away, and we've got Warriors assistant general manager Travis Schlenk, who should be at the Combine, Dibs.
Yes, he should be doing his due diligence, although the Warriors currently sitting with, and I'm looking at my draft sheet, a grand total of 0 draft picks for the Golden State Warriors, which doesn't mean that they won't buy in like they bought in to get Patrick McCaw, but you never know. Right now, they have no picks.
Should lend itself to a little R&R for Travis on this road trip.
You would figure.
All right. Last night, if you didn't see it, and I'm guessing most of you didn't, the Washington Capitals were eliminated in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference semifinals. Now, the Capitals have won the President's Trophy 2 years in a row. Best record in hockey during the regular season. And 2 years in a row, they've been kicked out in the second round of the playoffs. The fans of the Capitals wish that was the tip of the iceberg. They wish that was the end of it, I should say. But instead, this team is the classic, classic underachiever. You think Buffalo going to 4 Super Bowls and not winning one was bad? You think Philadelphia going to 4 straight NFC championship games and then finally breaking through only to lose to the Patriots in the Super Bowl was bad? This is as bad as it gets. This team can't even get to the conference finals. With Alex Ovechkin, they have not gotten to the conference finals. In fact, Washington, as a hockey town, hasn't been to the conference finals since 1998 when they beat the Sabres to go on to get swept by the Detroit Red Wings in the Stanley Cup final. This happens on the same night the Washington Wizards lose Game 5 of the Eastern Conference semifinals to the Boston Celtics. They're now down 3-2. Let me take you through professional sports in the city of Washington. They've got all 4 professional sports teams. The Capitals have never won a title. They, like I said, haven't been to a conference final since 98. They won that conference final, but then they were beaten in the Stanley Cup final. The Wizards won a title in 1978 against the Sonics. I remember that. Like, it was, oh, no, wait, that was 2 years before I was born. Their last championship appearance was 1979. The Washington Nationals, how about them? Every year, a lot of people like what they can do. They've never won a series. They've never made it to the NLCS. The best they've done is the playoffs. In 1981, when they were the Montreal Expos, they made it to an NLCS. So it doesn't even count. The best thing the city of Washington has going is the Redskins. They won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
1991. That's it. That is the state of professional sports in the city of Washington, which leads us to the following question. Is it the worst sports city in America? Now, a lot of criteria can be thrown around. Do you want to go with just the cities that have all 4 pro sports teams? Because with a little fudging by my count, that gives you 14. Now, San Francisco gets on the list. Oakland's on the list. I consider them sharing the Sharks. I consider it a Bay Area thing. So you've got 2 football teams. You've got 2 baseball teams. And I also say you share the Warriors. I don't know how people are going to feel about that. Oakland's not going to be too happy, I'm sure. But I'm going to credit them as 4. So you've got Boston, Chicago, Dallas, Denver, Detroit, Los Angeles, Miami, Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul, New York, Philly, Phoenix, San Francisco, Oakland, and Washington. You can go with all 4, or you can come in with a worse city that maybe has 3, or 2, or 1. It's your call. 888-957-9570. Dibs, would you like to kick us off?
I would, and it's a city that I think has been bad for a long time. Washington, D.C., you make a great case, because if you throw out the Washington football team, they've got nothing going on. And, you know, Washington's won one.
Think about what you just said there. If you throw out the Redskins, they've got nothing going on.
Right.
That's a bold statement because the Redskins stink.
Well, they've won at least 5 over their great history, 5 championships. I know they've won, what, 1 Super Bowl? Is that right? The Skins
have won multiple. They won in 91, they beat the Bills, and then you had Doug Williams in the 80s.
Gotcha.
But still, I mean, your boy was like in diapers.
Yeah.
We're talking many Mount Rushmores ago.
Many, many, many amount ago. I always would go with Atlanta, a city that has just 1 title. I know they don't have all 4 major teams anymore.
Thrashers were there for a minute.
They were. I think if you open up this category to cities with just 3 or even cities with 2, you'll get much more disparate in the answers. But I've always gone with Atlanta. Not a very good sports town, and a town where their teams don't win either.
Lo, you've played in a lot of cities. We could probably do multiple worst city Mount Lowmore.
Yeah, Cincinnati. They won. Used to have decent baseball, but Bengals made the Super Bowls and never won.
Been a long time for the Natty.
It has been for the Dirty Natty. I tell you another place that used to have basketball and had baseball and had football no longer was San Diego. You think about there, you know, hadn't necessarily been a good there. So there's a lot of teams. A lot of cities, rather, that have 3 sports, you know, that just can't get over the top.
I grew up in one of them. If the Phillies don't win the World Series in 2008, you have to go all the way back to 83 to get anything. That was the Sixers. And then in 80, you had a World Series. You also had Jaworski and the Eagles getting smashed by the Raiders in the Super Bowl. That was a treat for everyone involved, at least in that city, not here. Everyone here loved it. You had back-to-back Stanley Cups in the early 70s with the Broad Street Bullies. But that's it. It's a city that prides itself on sports. There's not a lot to do there. They love their sports teams. And right now, all they've got is a process. Everybody's running a process in Philadelphia. That's it. Nobody's winning games. They're just, they got a process.
Talent. You got a lot of talent in Philly, man. Your basketball team got a lot of talent. You might have more talent. Just got to start winning.
The point is, it's a tough spot. I see Detroit on the PenskeAutoSales.com text line. The Red Wings had a nice little dynasty going on there for a while. I think it was 25 straight years they were in the playoffs until this season. It's tough to knock Detroit as the worst sports town. You know what I am seeing, and I did not anticipate this, but there's a case to be made. And if you want to weigh in, 888-957-9570. I didn't anticipate this. Oakland has popped up five different times. And the case is that as a sports town, it's losing its basketball team. It's losing its football team. Can't get stadiums built. And its baseball team is, let's be honest, it's been fun to watch this year, but the last 3 years overall have been a struggle. I personally don't side with that direction, but there are cases being made that Oakland is the worst sports town.
Wrong answer is what it is. As an Oakland resident, I'm obviously hypersensitive to it, but I believe there was a parade in Oakland about 23 months ago. So you can go ahead and take an egg in your shoe and beat it all the way back through the 510, back to the 925 where you most likely came from, kind texters. An even better answer.
And are you 925?
She is 925.
How are you going to do that to her?
Because the only time that 925 comes in the 510 is when they're trying to get to the 415. So
not true.
Do me a favor.
I'm constantly in the 510, by the way.
Take your act.
I was just in the 510 last night. Thank you very much.
Next time, why don't you take your act down to the 408, come up through the 650 to get to your 415. They're using us, Coach.
It's like Chinese you're speaking to me right now.
What about, and I was just throwing this out, I haven't done the research on it yet, but what about Houston? Again, I don't think they have all four. They don't have a hockey team. But there's a town that hasn't seen much since the Rockets went back-to-back. They've had nothing. That's not 25 years.
In their defense, Brad Lidge gave up what may have been the greatest postseason home run of all time to Albert Pujols. It hasn't landed yet. I was reading NASA's website the other day. They're still tracking it. It's out by Uranus.
Wow.
Thing's still in orbit. About to go interstellar, as they say. Interstellar.
Miami would be on that list if they didn't have LeBron James and come to the city and turn it around.
Actually, you know what's funny? List. I would have thought so, too. The Marlins, however, have a World Series.
Two.
Couple, not too long ago. And the Florida Panthers. Didn't the Panthers win one, or did they just get there?
They just got there. They didn't win it.
Still, though, shockingly, Miami, the worst situation in Miami, is the Dolphins. But they had the U. So even though we're dealing with pro sports, there's not a whole lot to complain about. I would have loved to have lived down there when that was all taking place.
They were a pro team, Joe.
From the 209, yeah, you know what? Good, fair point. They were a pro team. More pro than a lot of teams I'm watching these days. Phoenix is the worst sports city. We kicked that around this morning as well. The Suns haven't done a whole lot since the Nash era and all that. The Cardinals were in the Super Bowl against the Steelers, came up short, but the Diamondbacks beat the Yankees in one of the greatest World Series of all time. Seven games, Dips.
Phoenix has just the one, though. And you look at, I'm looking at a Wikipedia article about championships by city, by sport. Phoenix with the 1-0-0-0, same as Atlanta. One baseball and then nothing in the other three. Among the least winningest. And then you get down to San Jose actually on the list. Obviously, they only have one team. If you throw the Earthquakes in there, fine. But San Jose yet to get one either.
Dibs, don't forget from the 510. 510 plus 415 equals 925.
There you go. It takes two area codes to equate to what? How great we are. I don't even know what that means.
Jonathan, San Francisco, thank you for holding. Worst sports city in America, go.
Hey, guys. Got to be Atlanta, Georgia, man. I got relatives there. Then out into the Falcons. Then out into the Trashers. Then out into the Bulldogs. Then out into the Hawks. I mean, they go to work. They go enjoy the wilderness and hunt. That's it. They go to sleep. Hey, real quick.
They
guys,
go hunt. Go. I love that. Go ahead.
Hey, Joe, how about this, man? I got this thing playing in my head before the NBA playoffs started. How about like the Cav guys and the Warrior guys, right? They sauced it up by like, hey, we're going to put $10 million on the table. You guys put $10 million on the table. Whoever gets in the finals with a better record gets the money on the table. I think they did that, man. That's why both teams are 8-0.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome to know something like that's going on behind the scenes. Two teams pitch in 10 mil apiece on the table. Winners divided up. Best record heading into the finals. I mean, I don't. That's a great theory.
They're playing like yeah, there's that much money. Right. On.
The both teams are playing like they got 10 million on the line.
I mean, LeBron is playing like his very reputation is at stake. I don't think I can remember a postseason where he's been this energetic and this dominant going back to his days in Miami.
And what's going on with that too? There are people that are starting to float the concept that he's a little too energetic. Is there something to that? Is there something to that at all? Because people are looking at James performing at a high level. They're looking at what he's doing. This is, we've been told for years that we were supposed to see the fall off here. Are there people starting to float the rumors that something may not be, that it might not all be above board?
Yeah.
Are you hearing anything like that? Now, I'm not talking about from necessarily legitimate sources, but I've heard a couple peeps of people trying to make that claim. I'm not sure what to make of it.
There's whispers, and you know, we all talked about that fake news story that was out a couple weeks ago about him reportedly or allegedly using some supplement that turned out to not be true. It turned out to be one of these fake news websites, but anytime you see a player in his early 30s, he's what, 32, low? Is that right?
32.
You get a guy into his early 30s, and you start to head toward the back nine of your career, yet your performances continue to be at the same level, if not better. You have to have some skepticism, unfortunately, in this modern day of sports.
That's what baseball did to us. They got us questioning everything.
You're right. Baseball did do that, because you look at the Peyton Manning, you look at friggin' Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and you look at Phillip Rivers, you look at a lot of these guys still playing at a very high level, and you're still doing it night in and night out. You look at LeBron. Here's a guy who's a freak of nature. Look at his body size. He was freaking 6'5", coming out of 6'6", whenever he came out, and he was still over 200 and some pounds. This guy's just a big guy, and I think it's just because he takes those time off, and he's been able to turn up the next notch. But he's just a pretty phenomenal athlete. I think this guy's a good guy. I think he's clean, but it's just amazing how he's able to play.
Worst sports city in America is, ding, 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 Minneapolis, St. Paul. You can make a great case for the city of Washington, but let me run you through Minneapolis, St. Paul. We'll start with the football team, the Minnesota Vikings. They've never won a Super Bowl. They haven't appeared in a Super Bowl since 1976. Let's move to the baseball team, the Minnesota Twins. This is your shining glory. The last time you appeared in a World Series, you won it, 1991. That happened a few months before Washington won their last championship, which was the Super Bowl in January of 1992. To your basketball team, the Timberwolves, you've been out of the first round one time. Think about that. The Minnesota Timberwolves have been out of the first round of the playoffs one time. No championship appearances, no titles. And then you've got the hockey team. The last time you appeared in a championship game, it wasn't even the team you have now. It was the Minnesota North Stars in 1991. That's the correct answer. The D train's up next. Back in a flash, Joe Low and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Joe Low and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
He's a World Series champion, two-time All-Star, one of the best guests to appear on this program, Dontrell Willis with Joe Low and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. D-Train, we were just in a discussion based on what happened with the Washington Capitals and Wizards last night. If you were to look all across America to find the worst sports city, and you had to weigh in on this in some capacity, which direction do you think you would go? Minneapolis has really struggled. Some say Washington is the worst. Do you have an opinion on the matter?
You know what? That's funny that you say that, because I was just saying, so I have a couple of friends that live in the D.C. area, and they've experienced a lot of pain over the last 5 to 6 years. I mean, with baseball, you know, coming up short, even though they've had a good ball club, you know, the hockey team events can always seem to come up short in Game 7. You know, everybody's wearing their jerseys hoping they can, you know, kind of get over the hump, and they always seem to come short. So, and then all the way with the curse of RG3, who I don't want to put that evil on, but it seems like, you know, they have good ball clubs, but they always seem to fall short in that division and get outplayed by the rival Philadelphia Eagles. So, you know, it's a little tough go over there in the nation's capital for me.
Dontrell, I was talking to a mutual friend of ours, Barry Ford, yesterday. Mr. Ford says you owe him a phone call, so let's go ahead.
I'm going to hit my man up.
Let's handle that unpleasantry straight off the top, okay? Got to clear that up here. A little house business, Joe.
It's all good.
Dontrell, when you played in Miami, you guys had success, obviously, but how were the fans down there? Was it fair weather in that you were good in September they came out, or were they always there for you, Dontrell?
But you know what? It was funny, especially, you know, my personality, it, not to sound arrogant or anything, but, you know, I think everybody started to notice, especially guys in the locker room, they noticed they came out for me, you know, a little more. You heard a little more buzz because, you know, like I said, win or lose, you never know what you're going to get from Dontrell, but it's going to be entertaining. So, you know, and they are always good about supporting us, especially the guys that lived in the area. But, again, I think they always kind of watched us with one eye closed because they were worried about just us leaving the organization because the organization has a rich history of dumping their good players once they get popular. So it's kind of tough for them, and I think that even though they signed John Carlos Stanton and other guys around them, they're still kind of wondering, oh, when's this going to happen where they have another fire sale? But I've always been blessed to been able to get support by there. Was never booed down there, and I've had some games where I booed myself. So, you know, but again, it was always fun, and they always supported me down in South Florida. I always enjoyed it.
D-Train, it's that East Bay swag. They don't know how to handle that in the humidity.
Nah, I don't blame them either, though. I tell you what, though, I've pitched in front of some crowds where, you know, on dog day, on Wednesday at 1 o'clock, and I've heard barking, and all of a sudden I go to dinner, and all of a sudden I'm getting a standing ovation from my auntie. They're like, Train, we love you, but we can't sit in that heat all day. And I understand that, baby. Trust me, I've been on that field, so I said, I respect that. I'll sign your plate right now and enjoy your evening. But I get it, but they're the best fans. They really are.
DJ, appreciate it, man. Hey, what do you think when you look at this A's team? Are they overachieving, or do you feel where they're at where they should be? Do you think this young pitching staff, you think they're going to be all right? And do you think the second half or this middle, getting ready to hit this middle part, do you think teams are going to figure these pitchers out and you start seeing giving up more runs? And just how do you view them in all in general?
I think they are where they are. I think their offense is starting to pick it up. You know, they won 5 of the last 7 after dropping 8 or 9. So that's kind of a sign of a young ball club just learning how to play every day. You know, the bumps and bruises and the aches and pains of just going out there and getting ready to play. You know, Andrew Triggs has emerged as the young ace. You know, I definitely like Graveman, but he struggled since coming off the DL. And you know that's going to happen, especially with Cotton, because, you know, again, they're learning how to get through the lineups, and now that teams have a book out on them, now they have to make the adjustment and see how they want to attack teams. But I'm really, really excited. They walked off the Detroit Tigers. I was a little concerned about that matchup with their lineup overwhelming them, but they did a great job of showing the resilience and, you know, play good baseball. So, you know, I always like seeing them in those yellows and hitting those home runs and just seeing that energy, and we are family. So they're going to be right there, but the division is going to be tough, especially with the Houston Astros playing great baseball on both sides of the ball.
D-Train, did you say in that last answer that when you would go in the restaurant and get a standing O, you would autograph plates?
Listen, I swear, I went to P.F. Chang's, autographed plates. It's crazy because the Marlins were always top 5 in TV ratings. So when everybody talks about, you know, the fan base and the lack of, it's actually not true. And I tell you, I've been to many places where I've walked into restaurants and games and people talking my ear off, and I'm like, hell, why didn't you come to the game? And they're like, again, it's like, it's too damn hot, D-Train, to be watching you walk everybody. So, and I don't blame him. I said, you ain't man on that. I wouldn't watch me walk the house either in that heat. So I understand it. But again, they're knowledgeable fans. You know, there's a culture of baseball, and they definitely appreciate and love the game.
Andrew Triggs yesterday walked the first 3 batters he faced, and you had some spells where you had some control problems as well. What do you do as a pitcher when you're clearly going through something where you can't find the dish? How do you get yourself out of it? He was able to do that yesterday and go out and get the win.
Well, you know what? You have to simplify it, and Zoe can contest it. Sometimes you get on the mound or you get on the field and you make things too complex and you take away from your athleticism. And honestly, you just need somebody to come up to you and tell you to get your butt in gear. Excuse my language, but, you know, and he did that, and he turned himself aggressive. He wasn't afraid to miss the bats. And then what happens is on the mound, the plate just opens up to you, and that's exactly what he did. And he showed me veteran composure on the mound, because usually in a game like that where you're struggling, you know, you see guys mail it in. But he knew that he couldn't do that for this ball club and put that bullpen in that position. So I'm really, really proud of his effort. And that was a huge win for that ball club, especially going into this off day feeling good about yourself.
Dontrell Willis with Joe Lowe and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. There's a trend, an interesting trend emerging in baseball where you've got these power guys, George Springer, Kyle Schwarber, Mike Moustakas, Carlos Santana, leading off. It used to be the small Billy Hamilton types, the ones who could move. Now you got the big guys up there that can swing. What do you think about that?
Well, I don't mind about that. The only thing that's tough is it's not easy, and you're seeing it from Kyle Schwarber. It's not easy leading off. You know, leadoff hitters are an art, you know, and we've had one of the best leadoff hitters of all time in Ricky Henderson. He was able to work the count, but also hit with power and enforce the issue on the bases. And I think that's a lost art. And Juan Pierre, being one of my best friends, I always felt like his game was kind of overlooked and it wasn't appreciated. But with the Florida Marlins, we loved his game because he was the table setter and he put pressure on the pitcher. And when you have a guy that's able to put pressure on the pitcher, 9 times out of 10, he's going to make mistakes to the power guy because he's worried about you stealing the next base. And that's what you're seeing right now in Cincinnati with Billy Hamilton being that burner, and he's able to put pressure on the pitcher, and the pitcher's too worried and focused on the runner, and he makes mistakes at the plate. So, again, I think it's one of those things where you need to go back to finding those guys and those table setters because they're important. But, heck, if you've got a power guy that's able to be comfortable in that position, you can use them too.
D-Train, when you're looking at the Giants, you see them finally get off the stye, got a win last night.
Right.
When you look at his team somewhat, okay, trade deadline coming July, all the different things happen. Do you think they need to make some moves now, or do you think that this team is going to stay put and they don't need to start that rebuild?
Well, you went out and got Melanson, and he's had a tough go as far as just staying healthy and just finding his rhythm. So, you know, he's on the DL now. And honestly, you just have too many, you know, holes to fill. But, Buster Posey, I talked about this on his show. He's finally found his power stroke. He went and got that good set out of the garage and started to hit the ball with some power. But, again, it all starts and ends with that rotation. And this lineup, they definitely need a little more thump because they're not able to sustain rallies as well as the other teams that could just hit for power, hit for the 3-run home run and what have you. So you're seeing if they get behind, it's tough for them to, piece together a bat to come back and get in that game. So that's why it was really, really nice to see those guys get familiar last night, especially on the road. But they're going up against after the Cincinnati Reds, where they gave up 31 runs in a 3-game series to 5. So if it happens again, man, get your garlic fries and get on that freeway early because it's going to be tough for those guys to come back because of how this lineup is put together.
Oh, man. World Series champ, 2-time All-Star. He's an MLB analyst for FS1.
Follow him. We won an Emmy, too. Don't forget that. We won an Emmy, too, baby.
Congratulations. How do you celebrate an Emmy win? Does it compete with a World Series?
Yes, sir. Postseason coverage, baby. And I was out there listening to Pete Rose talk my ear off about everything and anything. Petey's my boy. But, yeah, we got an Emmy. So I'm really proud of this group, really excited, and just really blessed because I work with some of the best guys in the sport. And all I have to do is not mess it up. So I'm just really, really excited, man. I'm really, really proud of us.
Well, the North Coast section got away from you, but the Emmy sure didn't, Dontrell. That's awesome.
Don't bring that evil on me.
That's only this, baby.
Every time I go home and I see 2 second place ribbons, man, I am absolutely salty, man. But shout out to the Intel Jets, man. They bring it home after I left, so I lived through them, baby.
Dontrell Willis, ladies and gentlemen, one of the best in the business. Thank you, Dontrell. We'll catch up with you next week.
No problem, fellas. Have a good day.
Now back to Joe, Lo, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. Tickets to give away in 14 minutes at 8:45, as well as a conversation with Travis Schlenk, Warriors Assistant General Manager. Great to have you in, Joe Lo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. We were about to get into a discussion regarding the Golden State Warriors, Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, recent comments that they made. And then we came across some news during the break, and we decided to pivot. So bear with us here. And if you want to weigh in on this, get ready. The phone line is 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. The text line is 95795, PenskeAutoSales.com text line. Michael Lombardi, who used to be a front office executive with the Oakland Raiders, he also worked for the Cleveland Browns and New England Patriots. He got his start in San Francisco under Bill Walsh back in the 80s. He's now working for a website known as The Ringer. It's Bill Simmons' website. Tremendous stuff. Lombardi does a podcast with another guy there. It's a football podcast. And yesterday's episode, about 19 minutes in, and we're working on the sound for you now. We're going to play it. Gets to the 49ers and the new era and Navarro Bowman. And according to Lombardi, the Niners, and I'm paraphrasing here, the Niners have made it known that Bowman is available for trade and that he's healthy. let that sit in, Raider fans who need an inside linebacker. Navarro Bowman is healthy and being made available for trade by the San Francisco 49ers, according to Michael Lombardi of The Ringer. Lo, you just heard the news 2 years, 2 minutes ago. 2 minutes ago, this just came across. First thought.
If I'm the Raiders, if I'm a lot of organizations, I pick up the phone. And I pick it up. And if I'm going to try to work out a deal, I bring Navarro. Now, you bring Navarro Bowman in. Because one thing you don't have to question about him, his heart and his work ethic. Now, I don't know if the contract that he has, I forget them. I know they did him an extension. I just don't have any years left on it.
7 years, $77 million.
Okay.
That is going to be the biggest obstacle.
There you have it. So, as I digest, you would have to make sure that you look at that and say, if you're going to make this trade, it'd be trade to sign a new deal, because $77 million for a guy who's torn up his knee completely, Joe. I love him. I think he's a great player. Just don't know how much thread he has on that knee that had total reconstruction. You saw how bad that tear was when it happened.
Dibs, news surfaced 2 to 3 minutes ago on this situation. First thing that went through your mind.
Wow. I mean, that's a bold move, you know, for the 49ers, a team that has so many young players coming in through the draft and undrafted free agents and free agency, period, to want to part with one of your veterans. It seems surprising, but you could see why. I mean, that contract is a bit of an albatross, to the extent that as long as he's on your team and he's playing, you're going to have to pay him big money. And if you're a team that's struggling, you've got this good player. I don't know if he's a star player anymore. We'll see how he comes back from the Achilles tear as he continues to get toward 100%. But if you're a really good team needing just one piece, like the Oakland Raiders, for example, you need a linebacker. This guy fits a need. Maybe there's a trade partner out there for the Niners.
Your cap hits on the Bowman deal are as followed. The first year of the deal last season, because it was an extension, so that was kind of tied in, was about $10.2 million. This coming season, your cap hit $9.5 million. Then in 2018, $11.9 million. The following year, 2019, which at around 3 years from now will be about 33, 32 years old, that would be a cap hit of $6.4 million, and then you have a potential out. There's a potential out in this deal in 2020. So essentially, you'd be picking him up for what looks to be 3 years. 3 years. According to what I'm reading right now, 2020, this could be conceived as a four-year, $36 million deal that the Niners gave him with the out. I'm not exactly sure what the out is, but that's the information I've come across at the moment. Do you have Lombardi on The Ringer? Okay, this is Michael Lombardi, former front office executive, now with Bill Simmons' website, The Ringer, on Navarro Bowman and the 49ers.
If you want him, he's healthy,
yeah,
that they'll be willing to move. I think this, too, I think what fans have to understand is, and this is what we always did in the league, is whenever there's a new coaching staff, and this is an Al Davisism, whenever there's a new coaching staff, you have to always know that the teams that hire new coaches are going to get rid of players because they want different players.
Yeah, they just want a new – it's
right.
Just
now,
turnover.
I don't know about Bowman as just being a new player, but San Francisco is going to clean – Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, they're going to clear out that roster. Bowman is a guy who's been a leader in the locker room. He's been part of the team. He had a really good relationship with the old general manager, Trent Baalke. So I think that this is a message they would send to the locker room, that he's no longer in control anymore. Mm-hmm. He's available if you want him. I don't know who's going to pay him $9.5 million coming off all the injuries that he's had, but you can have him. And I think that ultimately, you know, you got to make that decision. I don't think it'll be a lot. I think the 49ers will get rid of him for very little.
Exactly. And that's exactly the point. When a gigantic contract like this is attached to a player who's going to be on the other side of 30 and is coming off major injuries, to get him is not going to cost you much. This isn't going to be a first and a third. We're talking like, I don't know, a fifth, a fourth. If you dangled a fourth right now, if the Niners really wanted to move him and you dangled a fourth, that's a win for them. Because if they don't want him on the roster, they can clear out that cap space and get ready to use it elsewhere, Lo.
You're right, Joe, but I'll tell you what's going to happen. And Navarro Bowman probably won't. Now, listen to me clear. He's probably not going to go through training camp. He won't go through, you know, like thinking 2 weeks they have the veteran, all the teams have their minicamp. He won't go through it. The risk is not worth the reward. He's been injured, coming off Achilles. They're not, this guy, I, in my opinion, when you hear things like this, I've been down this road. I think that there's a foregone conclusion that Navarro Bowman will no longer be a 49er. I mean, believe that or not, I don't even think it's going to be a trade, Dibs. I think this is going to be a guy that's, unfortunately, they're trying to throw that out there. They're saying he's healthy. I think they'll cut Navarro Bowman.
So if they cut him and you're the Raiders, that's when you'd make your move, would it not be?
Yeah, the price obviously gets a lot cheaper if you have a guy who's a street free agent. And then it's a risk-reward situation for the Raiders if he doesn't work out, if he's not at top form, which the guy had an ACL, MCL tear a few years ago and then the Achilles injury, and he's got a lot of miles on those legs, and it's really a low-risk move for the Raiders. I would love it if they were able to slide him right across if the price was right.
Think about the leadership you lose and the example you lose for Reuben Foster. That's the one thing I don't like about this from a 49er standpoint. That's a guy who needs some guidance. Not to say he's a problem, but you could learn from someone like Bowman. Bowman was no saint coming out of Penn State, if anyone remembers.
Right.
Not to say he mixed it up and got in a lot of trouble, but he was involved in a couple of those minor Brushes. Things that involve alcohol and, you know, some just kids being kids type stuff. Nothing to get too concerned about, but
Tough.
You still look at it and you wonder, okay, are there going to be some problems here? By all accounts, model NFL citizen, right?
Oh, yeah.
Model NFL citizen, team leader, productive,
tough,
good in the community, tough, everything you want in an inside linebacker. The type of guy, as a parent, you're happy to buy that jersey for your kid.
Yeah.
Happy to buy it for your kid. That's the type of guy that can develop Reuben Foster.
Without a doubt, he can develop him, Joe. But here's the thing that you got to realize. Like, look at Kyle Shanahan and you look at John Lynch. John Lynch understands he's been on both sides of it. He's been a GM. He's been a player, just like Guy, and he's got cut. He understands how this business works. Went to New England. You know, Patriots looked at him and said, John, you can't do it. John said, okay, I'm retiring. He's in Denver. So John's seen it all. So you don't – John is going to sit down with him and say, Navarro, I love when you're watching you play. Man, I love you. John's he's a smart guy. He's been in this league, and he is going to respect Navarro Bowman. He is going to sit down with him and say, Navarro, get your agent. Let's see if we can get a trade. See if we can get – I'm giving you permission to go shop because they're shopping him. Without a doubt, when you make those type of statements, Joe, you're absolutely trying to move a player. But right now, they're going to see if there's any suitors. And this is another good move by the GM, but John Lynch, and their coaching staff by saying, look, let's see if we can float this out there. Let's see if we can get some suitors. Let's see if we can trade him to get some value. But if they don't, I just think that they look at this situation – guaranteed, how much is it guaranteed if you get hurt on opening day because he's a veteran? Do you want to take that $10 million salary? And that's some of the things that they have to deal with. It's not that they don't love this guy. It's not that they don't love the way that he plays. It's just the injury prone and how this is going to be turning 30. Those are the things that they have to weigh and say, huh, do we willing to do this?
The NFL is
a
cold, cold mistress. A cold mistress. You know they're shopping Vance McDonald, too. Like, bulky, this is why the Bowman deal I understood. I never had a problem with that. But, like, the McDonald deal towards the end of the year, it was like, what if you're Jed York, if you're Prague, why are you letting Bulky sign these deals? You're going to crap can him. Like, why are you letting him do these deals? They don't want Vance McDonald around, not at the price they gave him.
Okay.
But with Bowman, if he hits the market and the Raiders' first two picks are corner, safety, and then they pick up Bowman for the inside spot, suddenly that's a pretty formidable defense, is it not?
Yeah, very formidable. And to your point about the Niners and McDonald, that was a Parag Marate signing. That was him looking at the line item of what tight ends are worth and them valuing McDonald at a certain level. So you can't pin that one on Balky.
Good for him,
sometimes,
though. At least he got his money.
Sometimes you got to use the eye test. I love analytics as much as the next guy. I love crunching the numbers and looking at salary cap space. Sometimes the eye test. The eye test on Vance McDonald is what? Not a whole lot there. Makes a couple plays here and there, but not a whole lot there. All right. Travis Schlank, assistant general manager of the Golden State Warriors, and tickets to give away. All that's coming up next. Joe Lo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.